They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit, there'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 231, Charges of the Light Brigade. My name's Matthew Turner, alongside Anthony Fitzpatrick, Ryan McCluskey, and Ashley Soden. How you doing, boys?
Doing great.
Hey, I'm revived by the inspirational poetry we've just been doing, so, you know, great.
No, playtime's over. I'm about to go in on the Lions. Not happy with the performance, but we got the result.
So dour, come to expect it. But there we go. We're going to get into all of that in just a moment. We're going to have a look at the Lions, at the Chargers, and the shootout victory that it was for Jared Goff's Lions. But we're going to do a little bit of preamble first, as we always do. And first up, as always, please don't forget to join our Discord channel. It's a fantastic place to be all the way through the week, talk sports with us all the way through the week, and experience the game live with us as well. Link is in the chats right now. College Football Podcast, Ant and Ryan, coming up this week. And it was another really interesting week. I thought it was going to be low key, but there were some blowout victories for some unfancy teams.
No, every team I put my faith in let me down, so screw them all. I'm in a bad mood. I'm in a bad mood with the college lot this week. Penn State let me down. Air Force let me down. A lot of teams let me down this week. And all the firings have begun now. After no firings all season, everybody's getting fired. So that's going to be a big emphasis on the show this week.
Bye-bye, Jimbo.
Depth Charge 313 says that they followed Ant's tip on higher than 48.5 points. Great call, apparently. So well done, Ant. You've won someone some money. Was it Oklahoma State you laid an egg?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was rough. I can't believe I picked them. Hate it. Anyway, please don't forget to like the show, sub to the podcast and all of that good stuff. And please don't forget to go to Lions Nation Unite on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/LionsNationUnite. Herman Moore's project to bring the best in Lions content creators together. We're also Twitch affiliated, YouTube monetized, and there's a tip jar down below in the YouTube description. If you enjoy what you're listening to and you'd like to show some appreciation in that way, that'd be much, much appreciated. But you listening is all that we need. And there's a feedback form down below as well. If you've got any thoughts on the show, any ideas for content or anything like that, you can find the YouTube description. Please get in touch. We also have our merch store that we've launched. Lovely showing off of it by Ant and Ash there with the hat and the hoodie. Some really, really nice stuff, actually. So if you do want to support the show, but in a completely different way, that linkage is in the description too. And you can also find it on the website. Right, let's get into this, boys. Lions 41, Chargers 38 in a tough matchup for the Lions. And they came in 2-point favorites, covered the spread, just some high-level takes. So myself and Ash, we obviously had our time on the live reaction show yesterday. And what did you make at a high level on the game?
I made out that my nerves were reduced to stringy cheese. I was a nervous wreck by the time this one was done. But it was a lot of fun. When you get a game that's, nearly 80 points in there, it's going to be a fun affair. And it sort of went exactly how I thought it was. Big ding-dong battle between two good offenses. And, you know, I was very, very happy with what went on. Generally, overall, there are some things. I'm probably going to be a bit more on Ryan's side than everyone else, but there are a few bits we need to clean up. But overall, I was just so impressed with Dan yesterday. Called a perfect game. And so, against teams, I said that last week, you have to be aggressive against teams like this. They're going to put up lots of points. They're just that kind of a team. Like every time they've lost this year, they've put like 30 points. So you've got to go out there. You've got to be aggressive. You've got to steal possessions. You've got to keep hammering on the door, no field goals, etc. like that. And we were really good. We stayed true to ourselves as a team. ran hard, opened the passing game up, absolutely sliced and diced them to bits. And every time they made a comeback, every time they tried to put one on us, the team responded. You know, it's under a lot of pressure with the Vikings doing better and winning and coming level with us. It's like that's the game where you could drop and then you give them an opening. And that's where old Detroit probably would have made a mistake. And we didn't. I know we had a couple of turnovers and we had some drives at stall, but you know, you keep going to the end, you get the last possession, and then you make the ballsiest call of them all. But it's a show of faith in your offense. And when you show that sort of faith in your offense, they're going to repay you. So on the whole, on the high, I loved what Dan did. I loved what Ben did. I thought they both played absolutely tremendous games. Less said about the other side, the better, but we came away with a win, and that's, at the end of the day, all we needed. It's one of the harder fixtures on the road. Escape with a win. Don't care how you do it. Just do it. And we did.
Ryan, what do you make of it all?
It's like a delicious chocolate bar that was 50% like Belgian chocolate. The other 50% was dog shit scooped out of a litter tray. All right, when you peel it back. Ben Johnson continues to just wow me. Aaron Glenn, once again, does not cover himself in glory whatsoever and has to have his ass dragged across the finishing line. What happens? It just frustrating. Can't fault the offense. In the end, Brad makes a ballsy call because I agree that he trusts the offense, but he did not trust the defense to get that job done. That's the only reason he goes for the fourth down. Didn't trust him. And I didn't trust him at all. And I don't trust Glenn to put people in the right position. So, no, we won, but I saw some issues that are not just, like, say, we'll work on it. They're reoccurring as well. Coming out of the half, again, abysmal. There's things that have been there nearly all season that are not getting rectified, and it's starting to grate me. And I'm usually quite a patient person. I mean, that's not true, obviously. That's a massive lie. But even now, they're beginning to test my patience. So we got the job done. Lots of it was not pretty. But the stuff that was pretty made me feel really happy. So I'd be pretty furious right now if we'd lost. I'd be seething, actually. But we didn't. We dodged a bullet. And we live to fight another day.
Ash, having had 24 hours to sleep on it after we were talking about it, I kind of remember during the game, all the copium as they started coming back with people saying, oh, it won't be so bad if we lose. But now we're sitting here, the victors. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm with the guys in a way, like, obviously, offense, can't fault them to it at all. Like, everything went well that could have, and nothing really went wrong, even to the point where when personnel were coming out at the wrong time in the wrong formations, we still managed to polish the turds and turn it into gold, especially when that gold is 75-yard rushing touchdowns, if you believe the stories coming out after the game. But yeah, the defense, some major issues. Me and you were both saying it all game. We need to do something to stop them getting the mismatches for Allen, because that's the reason they kept it. They were still in the game because we just couldn't cover Keenan Allen to save our lives. They were just constantly moving him around, putting him in positions where they know we couldn't cover him. And it nearly wins them the game. So yeah, there's definitely things that need to be looked at on the game, the game plan in the film for the defense. But offense, just carry that momentum into next week, please.
Looking at the stats overall for the game, each of us scored in every single quarter, which is the first time I've seen that in a long time in a Lions game. On the Detroit side of the ball, Jared Goff, 23 of 33, 333 and two touchdowns. Rushing the ball, Montgomery led the team, 12 carries, 116 yards and a touchdown. Jahmyr Gibbs, 14 for 77 and two touchdowns. Receiving, Amon-Ra Brown was the man, 8 of 9 for 156 and a touchdown. Khalif Raymond chipped in with 2 of 4 for 46, including a 41-yarder to set us up for the game-winning field goal. Sam Laporta chipped in late 2, 4 of 5 for 40, but the rest of the guys also did some work. Jahmyr Gibbs, 3 of 5 for 35. Brock Wright, 2 of 3 for 23 and a key touchdown late. Jameson Williams had 2 of 2 for 18 and had a touchdown called back. We'll get into that in just a second. On defense, led by Anzalone with 9 and had 1 TFL. That was by Cameron Sutton, but no sacks on the day. Kirby Joseph had an interception early. Otherwise, Riley Patterson was perfect. 7 for 7 in extra points and field goals combined. Jack Fox had 1 punt for 29 yards because he was so damn close to the Chargers end zone as it was. On the Chargers side, Justin Herbert, 27 of 40, 323, 4 touchdowns and a pick. Rushing the ball, there's a team, they went 28 for 98 and a touchdown. That includes Austin Eckler going 19 for 67 and a touchdown. Receiving the ball, there's only one man to talk about. It's Keenan Allen, 11 of 14 for 175 and 2 touchdowns. But backed up very well by a few guys there. Austin Eckler himself, 4 of 7 for 48. Jalen Guyton, 4 of 6 for 41 and a touchdown. And Quentin Johnson, 4 of 4 for 34 and a touchdown. I mean, he got bailed out for some drops by some DPIs, but it all counts, I guess. Derwin James led the team in tackles. That tells its own story. He had 13. They did have 5 tackles for loss in the game. Derwin himself had 2. Kenneth Murray had 1. Khalil Mack had 1. And Joey Bosa, his only tackle, was a tackle for loss, apparently. Don't remember it, but never mind. Otherwise, Cameron Dicker was also perfect on the day. 6 kicks for 6. Let's get into the drives. And it started out for the Chargers on offense, boys, and for all the Lions' defense being shoddy, especially in the second half of this game, forced a 3-and-out early, and the Lions get on the ball. Amara St. Brown went for 46 yards in that first possession. Crosser versus busted coverage as a safety comes down to take out Josh Reynolds, and he just fits in behind him, which was lovely stuff. The drive kind of stalled out after the Jameson Williams touchdown on a wide receiver screen was ruled out for a low, and I'll put block in inverted commas here, that cost us 15 yards. We couldn't recover. The field goal was good from 33, and the Lions take an early lead. Chargers hit back. Eckler screened for 24, but otherwise they were very anemic. Lions held on from 2nd and 4 from the Detroit 32 to force a 48-yard field goal, which was good by Dicker. And then on the second drive for the Lions, Samuel DPI on Amon-Ra St. Brown kind of got there about a second or two early, you know, and that was legit in the center of the field. Gibbs then went for 35 yards from the 36 down at the 1, very close to getting in, just steps out of bounds. But then in a split back set with Malcolm Rodriguez at fullback, ran off left tackle running from the right-hand side of the 4 motion and got in. PAT was good, and Detroit lead 10-3. And I'll stop there after 2 drives. Boys, defensively, apart from that 1 Eckler screen that went for 20-odd, it was a fantastic start on defense. And then offensively, apart from the dubious call, shall we call it, Lions were perfect on offense. I mean, me and Ash are talking about the fact that it maybe couldn't have gone much better for us, Ant.
I mean, let's just call a spade here. The refs took a bribe yesterday, and I don't care what anybody says. They were so bad in this game. That call was balderdash, as in the words they say there. Taylor Decker barely touches him. The refs could not wait to throw flags in this one. There was absolutely nothing wrong with the block. If you actually watch, Glasgow's got more of a claim for a low block on this one because he actually hits his guy with a low block and doesn't get called for it. Taylor doesn't touch him, which is ridiculous. It's a great drive. It's a great play call. Everything's executed perfectly, and the refs decide, you know what, we're going to bung this one. And, you know, drive stalls, fine, but you know, what I loved about the offense is they didn't let it bother them. They took the field goal, and then they came back on the next drive. And, you know, you saw Jameer come to life, like 3 big runs in succession, like the third being his touchdown run, just moving it down the field. You know, the guy's a budding superstar, and this was the game that kickstarted it for him, but just gave us that jolt of life. We ran the ball down their throats. We didn't put it in danger towards that secondary of theirs, and we just made mincemeat out of them. So I love the way we came out on offense. They say it was just 1 bogus call from the Zebras that stopped us from getting 2 touchdowns. So I loved it. I loved the call. I loved the execution on the plays. The blocking was fantastic all day long, and Gibbs looked amazing. And the defense, yeah, it did well. Trouble is, you know, a lot of offenses start slow. They started slow in this one, and they did. And, you know, they did what they needed to. Gave us an early lead, which may have been critical in the end. So I love the start. I love the aggression. It was great.
Ryan, what did he make of that play in particular? Because it was light.
Yeah, it was weak. It was pretty pathetic. It was frustrating. I felt sorry for Jameson because he needed that score. That had given him some confidence that early in the game. Like, that was probably really frustrating to him. So I'm just sad that it negated what would have been a good, great start for him. But overall, couldn't fault the start we'd made. Like I said, defense kept them in check, held them to a field goal. And after bouncing back, like I say, we put together a good drive. We put Malcolm in, like I say, that's finding a bit of a niche role now as the fullback. Nukabinda, that's seeing a few more snaps on the offense, picks up some good blocks, leads out. And yeah, we finish off a drive that preyed on what we knew their weakness was. They're not good at stopping the run. They're terrible against it. So what did we do? We just went after it, challenged them to stop it, and they couldn't. Like I say, they didn't have a chance. They were tackling fresh air, like trying to catch a fart in a lift. Jahmyr Gibbs was the fart, and they never saw him coming. They couldn't lay a finger on him.
Ash, it was a terrific start.
It really was, and some of the play calling, like, I know that it came back, obviously, that the flag, but the play call for the JMO touchdown, the Amon-Ra completion in the first drive, where it's just using what we know is a weakness in those kind of defenses against them, because it's what happens to us with Kirby, using that against them. Just every single play call, perfect for the situation that we were in. Masterful game from Ben Johnson, and masterful for the players for executing it to that high of a degree. Because in some of the runs, especially if one of the blockers misses their block, instead of going for 5-10 yards, they'll be going for 1 or 0. It's just perfect synchronicity on the offense to open up.
Of course, that wide receiver screenplay wasn't necessarily wasted, as we'll come on to in the second half. But carrying on sequentially here, and, you know, LA are down by 10-3, and maybe the most important play of the game, considering how important possessions were in this game. Kirby, with a spectacular interception, got it at the Chargers 33. Herbert under pressure from Alex Anzalone, who had, I thought, a good day blitzing in this game, put Herbert under a huge amount of pressure. And Herbert channeled his inner Goff from 2 weeks ago, looked to throw the ball away, didn't get enough air on it. And Kirby, to his credit, who's backpedaling, reacts fantastically to it. And on replay, I'm not entirely convinced he wasn't out of bounds, but he was ruled in, and on review it was upheld. So fantastic interception. We still have possession. And then the Lions possession was just nuts from here on out. 33 yards we needed to go. And we went, was it 8 plays for 32 yards or something like that? It was a really long drive. Hang on, I'll double check. 12 plays for 32 yards before going out on downs. So 4th and 5 from the LA 28. We run on 4th and 5. And Monty gets it, which is just a ridiculous call, on 4th and 1. Amon-Ra St. Brown handoff from the fullback position for 3. 2nd down and goal from the 1, however, we go run, run, pass, and they all fail when we turn it over on downs. But we force another 3 and out. Another fantastic possession for the defense. We then come straight back at them after the punt. Passes go to Gibbs for 24, to Jamer for 13, to Amon-Ra for 14, spreading it out. 4th down and goal again from the 1, and this time Gibbs runs off right tackle for a touchdown, finally managed to punch in. PAT is good, and the Lions lead by 14. Chargers come straight back, though. Slow drive by them with some fairly unremarkable plays, to be honest, but finished by a beautiful 29-yard pass by Allen over Jerry, I just completely lost my train of thought, by Herbert to Allen, beg your pardon, over Jerry Jacobs down the right sideline on a post route. Maybe the prettiest touchdown of the day by the run by Monty, which we'll get into in a minute. PAT is good. That brings it back to 7. And the Lions lay down the challenge, takes one play to get the 14-point lead back. Monty, 75-yarder, run up the middle, apparently checked out of a busted play. They just kind of called the wrong thing with the wrong personnel. So they checked into something they knew. Once he goes up the middle, bounces it down the outside. Not dissimilar to the Gibbs touchdown 2 weeks ago, actually, just obviously from much further out. Just stayed in bounds. Really looks like from one angle he touched the line, but you can see from the sideline angle that he doesn't. PAT is good, and it's 24-10. Chargers then go tempo. Allen for Allen receives passes in this drive for 7, 13, and 28. And Eckler's touchdown run from the 2 on fourth down. PAT's good. 24-17, one play, and then the half. Boy, so a lot happened in that period of play. But Ryan, the first one was all started by the Kirby interception, and we win by 3 in the end, and it's the only turnover of the game.
Yeah. Ill-advised throw. Like I say, I'm not sure who he was aiming at. If he was attempting to get it out of bounds, it was poor. Like I say, he gets the one foot in and then gets the thigh down ever so close. Like I say, it would not have surprised me if they'd have overturned that. I'd have been like, that's just what they would have done. That would have been sod's law. But no, we steal possession, which ultimately that one possession is probably what he's able to see out the game, because this game, even by now, is going really quickly. Like I say, we march downfield and then we meet our first nemesis, which is the red zone, where we've been struggling. And then, yeah, stuffed. And it don't bother me. I'm fine with going it for like a 4-2, like the one. Like, I was okay with it. But it seemed like they picked a player that would have taken like a year to develop. Like, I see like Laporte come across, like they're trying to sneak him around the back. But he's pretty much diagnosed and sniffed out straight away. It didn't feel like he was ever going to go. It wasn't successful, but I would have probably just brought one of the D-line in or Malcolm and just probably try to run it up the middle again, if I'm honest. Like, it felt like quite a frustrating turnover and downs. But then we've got to make them go the whole way of the field. But they do, because we decide to put guys, like say we put everyone on Allen at some point in that drive, it felt like, and he beat nearly everyone. Like, it was just super frustrating. Like I say, Keenan Allen, for the injuries and the age and overall lack of athleticism, still probably one of the best route runners all of football, puts on a clinic, gets in behind Jerry, moves the ball down the field. And then we try to imitate our own goal line stand, and we do really well. Like I say, they come up with some really unimaginative stuff. Like I say, they literally try to go up the middle. It's not going to work. But then, like I say, fourth down, I think we're going to stop them. I think we're going to take back momentum, and we're going to go on and kick ahead. But no, like I say, Eckler, good centre of gravity. He's tough. Forces his way through. And yeah, it's frustrating. Like I say, we turn them down, so we give the entire field to march down. And it looked fairly easy at times. Like, we didn't offer that much resistance till we got the goal line. And at that point, I'm really frustrated. I feel like we've been really in control, and they're right in this. And I'm quite annoyed. And then, yeah, like I say, the long touchdown way could have stepped out of bounds, but did well to keep his balance. Gets the lead out train, gets Jameson by him, gets him around, gets those crucial blocks down the line that stop to force him out. And that big explosive play, what turns into 30, 40 yards because he's got company, turns into a score. And that kind of instant kickback, like you say, that kind of defensive coordinators hit, where they didn't make us work for it. We just come out with a big explosive player. And that, for a defense and a coach, she's demoralizing. That must have really frustrated Brandon Staley, who is under a lot of scrutiny before the game. His job is very much in danger at some point. Going in at the half, and it's only 24-17, I'm really frustrated. Like I said, we've got all these yards, we've got a good, healthy chunk of time of possession, we've got a turnover, and to materialize into a one-score lead, I'm not content, because I know, like say, what happens when we come out after the half, and I'm frustrated. At this point, I'm thinking to myself, like, it's going to be one of those days. It's going to be tit for tat. And we need to make the first possession out of the half count. So I'm content with the lead, but it should have been more.
And we had the Kirby interception. We didn't make it on fourth down, but we held them on a 3-and-out. Got down to fourth down again, but made it. And then our defense just started turning the mud, but we kept responding.
There was a lot to like in this sequence. Obviously, it starts with the turnover, pressure from your pressure from your rushers, makes an inadvertent throw, makes turnovers. One of the most basic things you can do in football, pressure on the quarterback. And Herbert, for the most part, is very good at protecting the football. You know, he's not like Josh Allen, who turns it over two or three times a week. He's usually pretty good in what he does. So for Anzalone to get the sort of pressure on him where he makes such a bad throw is big in itself. And then for Kirby to keep it inbound is even better. But you're right. Turnovers are critical, especially in a game where you're two big offenses going at one another. I have no issues with the next drive. I love the faith that Dan puts in the team to go for it. Like the fourth and six, you run the football. So you're asking your offensive line to be perfect. And, you know, we've already seen the plays of Jonah on that play coming across. Technically so great, turning his man inside out, creating a big hole for Monty to burrow through. And then when he's held up, three guys instantly piling in, pushing him over for the first down. It's like, you've trusted your offense to go make a big play, and they've stepped up and done that. You sort of bang your way all the way down into the red zone. Yeah, you don't get it. I love going for it, though, because you're leaving them at their own two, and the defense has come out pretty good. So they're hemmed right in. It's no danger. You've got to score touchdowns to win this. If you take field goals, you lose. I love the aggressiveness. You've not got much to lose. You're saying to your defense, look, I trust you to make a stop here, which they do. To their credit, they make a really good stop. You punt it out, you're going right back again. Offense goes back to work, and then you get all the way back down into the red zone, and you come to the same situation, fourth down, on what you've just failed on. And lesser coaches would have gone, you know what? I'm going to kick the points. I'm going to be safe here. What does Dan do? He goes to Jahmyr Gibbs and says, Jahmyr, I trust you to go and make this play. Big play. You're my guy. Go do it. And he does. And just this constant faith in his offense, they just bang down the doors of that Chargers defense. They blow it off, as they say, keep being aggressive and they'll buckle. And they did. So great for them to be able to go a few scores up. I love it to this point. Then, like you say, they come back. The next drive the Allen touchdown over Jerry should never have happened. And why should it never have happened? Because there's a third down in that sequence where Aiden is getting choked out by the right tackle. And I am sick and tired of these calls not being made on him. There is literally one where he grabs him by the throat. Even Riz himself tweeted that three plays in a row he got smacked in the helmet, which is just not allowed. And when your edge rushers are struggling enough, when they're resorting to such dirty tactics to play against, it's very difficult to get pressure on the quarterback. Herbert has a lot of time to throw, but it's visible that he's getting choked out on a play. Nothing done about it. All the time to throw in the world. And of course, they're going to capitalize on it. Keenan Allen's a damn good receiver. He's got over 10,000 yards in the league. Going to make a lot of people look foolish. And, you know, it's just a good throw. Like you said, great throw. I don't think the coverage is particularly that bad either. I just think the passes plays perfectly. And yeah, fine, they're going. But you come back out, may have had some things go against you. What do? They go straight out there and they put the lead back on the board. And on a busted play call as well, on the fly, Jared Goff makes that call to run the ball when they're meant to be running something else. Even Amarar himself said he didn't know what he was doing on that play, so he lines up. But the team, once again, when they need to, technically as proficient as you want them to be, they absolutely demolish that front line for the Chargers. And then the receivers come in, Raymond, J-Mo, both of them busting out high-class runs upfield, blocking. Monty with the sickest little duck and dive you'll ever see. He left three Chargers defenders for dead. Give him some space. The Duke is amazing. The coverage is amazing. Everything about that play is technically amazing from the Lions. They don't care whether they've been screwed by the rest. So go back out, put more points down. Fine, great. Only the issue you then have, as you say, is that they come back, they go up tempo, and they, you know, our defense looks like it's struggling. And it looked like it struggled with the tempo that they were at for a lot of this game. You give up the score, unfortunately, but hey, they're a good offense. They got a good quarterback. Sometimes they're going to get you with it. So you're still up a score at the half. You've got the ball going into the next. I'm quite happy at halftime, to be fair. But I'm very angry with the refs at this point, but I'm very happy with what the Lions did. And again, technically they were sound as anything. They are a well-oiled machine who beat down on that Chargers defense, and it was very pleasing to see.
Ash, it was a really interesting sequence. I mean, obviously there were some of the bigger plays in there, but I mean, I've kind of, because I've lumped too much together, really overlooked the run by Monty on fourth down 5 for 6. I mean, that's a gutsy call right there.
Yeah, it was a couple of gutsy calls in that whole sequence. Obviously, that Monty run, really good. The handoff to Amon Ra as well on the next one to convert. That's what we're looking for. It was complicated, but it wasn't overly complicated like we've seen in the past couple of weeks with Amon Ra getting the ball and trying to pass the ball to leave his open. Ben didn't go fully back to basics, but simplified things. Didn't try to get too clever, just did a little trickery, but not too much where it was making it hard for players to execute. It was like, okay, Amara's going to get the ball and do like a sort of end round. That's easy to execute, but it might catch him off guard, and it did. Because I saw the post-game interview, while Monty was fired up that Gibbs was obviously having a really good game before, it motivated him as well. He was like, well, if Gibbs is doing that, I've got to go and do it. So what does he do, as you say? Convert a couple of fourth downs and then scores a 75-yard touchdown on a broken play, technically. Like, we discussed it during the stream yesterday, but it's kind of solidified it. We have arguably a top three running back duo right now in the league. And it's...
It's got to be one. Who else has two running backs like this?
Falcons.
No one. No. Okay, maybe they do in terms of quality, but the way the plays are being called, Bijan and Algier are being absolutely decimated by their play calling. We're enhancing them, if anything.
If anything, yeah, true. So, yeah, okay, fine. With the off pure quality, top three. Off with the play call included, easy top run right now. Because, like, Gibbs, won't be surprised it'll come out later that he's leading the NFL running backs in scrimmage yards again for the past couple of weeks. Like, I'm tempted to pull out those tweets I've got saved, but I just want to save them for the end of the season and then be like, this is why you don't judge after 3 games, because there were parts of our fan base suspect partly, but the draft nicks and these draft nerds and all the fantasy nerds are like, oh, they're misusing Gibbs. Shut up. This is why. Are you happy now? Like, obviously, I'm not happy because I stupidly benched Gibbs for Chuba Hubbard because I'm an idiot.
Yes.
I'm not making that mistake ever again. And as soon as I said so, I apologize to everyone when Gibbs only has like 5 carries and 4 yards next week. It's totally on me. I will clip that and put it out as well if it happens.
Make the fantasy sacrifices, Ash. We have to do this. Keep him on your bench. Leave him there. Let him rot so that he flourishes in the league. You know the rules.
Putting my own words against me. Well played.
You've spoken it into existence now as well. And it wasn't not you criticizing me for putting something into the universe. And you've just said 5 carries for 4 yards. I mean, my word.
But then 5 catches for 150 yards.
Turns it around.
But yeah, just this half, I miss it because I did it last week, obviously. Well, against the Raiders. Ben wasn't having a good 2 weeks. Ravens and Raiders weren't his best play call games. Boy, did he bounce back after the bye. This was just elite.
It was. Right, let's get into the second half and starts with the Lions. And it was a good drive, all in all. I mean, it was actually a 3-and-out, but bailed out by Derwin James with a really bad hit on Josh Reynolds. And I'm surprised that there was no reference made to it whatsoever. But it hit in the head. You can see his neck crack back. And I mean, he stayed in the game as far as I'm aware. I don't think there was any concussion protocol whatsoever. But I was really surprised by that. But anyway, that elongates the drive. Gibbs had a TFL on him later on in the drive. James came on a safety blitz, causes the Lions to stall. And the Lions are forced to punt from the 37-yard line. Would have been a 55-yard attempt, which the Lions turned down. I think it was 4th and 14 or 4th and 15. There was no chance we were going for that. And with our kicker, there's no chance he's going for it either. But we'll talk more about that in a second. And instead, the Chargers take over. And Jerry commits a DPI on Quentin Johnston for 15 yards. Then in the air, you have Parham for 16, Allen for 12, 12 again, but he gets injured this time and is finished off by Guyton for an 18-yard touchdown. Splits Kirby and Cam Sutton with Walker rolling down into the box. PAT is good and it goes 24 apiece, but the Lions respond once again. Reynolds with a great third down conversion. Then Amon-Ra goes for 33 yards on third and two. Terrific play. And then call back to the wide receiver screen for JMO earlier. Amon-Ra St. Brown, for what I can tell, was the exact same play, just with different personnel in different positions. He takes a wide receiver screen, completely untouched, 20 yards for the touchdown. PAT is good, and the Lions go back up by 7, 31 to 24. I'll stop there. Boys, we scored in the third quarter. I mean, it's only up from here, right? But you know, even the drive that failed out due to the punt, we got deep into their territory and just unfortunate that TFL put us, you know, behind the sticks a little bit. But even then, it was a reasonably good drive. We let them back in, though, a little bit. I'll go Ant first this time.
Yeah, it was a shame. But, you know, one drive is one drive. You've got an entire quarter to do something. So first drive stalling, not great, but you do have the bonus that you have the score lead. So even if they do score, which they do, your level, you still have the ball in your hands. So you've still got the advantage. But, you know, I'm going to harp on about this again, but Quentin Johnston, these PI calls, very, very, very suspect. Very suspect. I don't know what the rules are with him, but Jerry barely touched him on that 15-yard one. There was the touch on the hip. Doesn't even grab him. It's just a touch on the hip, thrown. Ridiculous. Again, it's good drive starter for them to get those kind of things, but shouldn't have been given in the first place. But again, you go tempo a bit. The secondary's a bit all at sea. They're not really adjusting. The pressure's not really getting home. And, you know, you start to worry a little bit about it. They're moving it freely at this point. Ref's not helping, but the offense, I just love how they kept coming back out and they kept putting points on the board. Despite what the defense is doing, in a game like that, you need them to come out, keep moving the scoreboard, keep the pressure on the Chargers, and eventually it tells in the end, and they did. I love the drive. Amon-Ra is just amazing. You know, these last few weeks have proven for me. I always say, is he a fringe top 10 guy? No, he's a top 10 guy. Like, for what he brings to this team, for what he does, he's a top 10 guy, maybe even higher than that. And, you know, and Goff as well. I think Goff had his best game with us. And it was drives like this where questions got asked and they started, I say started shutting down the run. They started loading the box and making the passing game easier. I think we did really well because we ran that much on them. They got scared, opened it up a little bit. But he came out, slung darts, moved us down the field. He didn't look phased in the slightest. It's like every time the offense came out onto the field, you felt like he was field marshal and you had no worries in him whatsoever. You come back, get the play again on the screen. Amon-Ra doesn't get touched on the way, and the blocking's just amazing. Guys get out really quick. The other receivers block really well. Again, it's just execution at its top. And this team is executing at an elite level at the minute on offense. And, you know, great to see. So yeah, it's a pain in the arse that the start was slow, but when they hit us, we hit back and we did it all day long. And, you know, love to see that. Offense were just so good this day.
Ryan?
Yeah. I want surprise when throwing out coming out of the half, because just notoriously we've done that lots of times this season when we've deferred and got the ball back. We've come out and drives have stumbled, and it's annoying. And then, as Ant said, the defense for pretty much the entire second half struggled with tempo. They couldn't even get lined up quick enough after time. They looked way off it. Like motions, like say a lot of Allen, they didn't know what was going on. Like I say, there were a few little adjustments made. Like we had guys like Campbell trying to pick up like Keenan Allen in motion, like, what is Glenn doing? Like that is just, you're asking him to get murdered, because Jack has struggled in coverage this year. Like I said, that was just taking care of from a baby. Yeah, like I said, Jerry, soft penalty, hands on hip, turns him, but he still gets two hands. Quentin Johnston bobbles the catch, almost takes it in and takes it to the house, drops it. So it was still a very catchable ball. Jerry didn't actually interfere with him very much because he almost hauls it in anyway. So that was a weak call. But yeah, they go down the field. They gash us at every point. Most of the coverage was slack, whoever they were lining up on. A lot of pre-motion snaps, a lot of guys moving our defense, just getting lost in traffic. They just couldn't keep up. They look tired as well. Like I say, right now they're struggling to keep up with the pace because the Chargers are, they're getting to line of scrimmage, you're getting the ball snapped, and we're only just getting four down linemen with their hand in the dirt. So they've got us where they want us on defense. Like I say, level it up, but then offense, not phased. Like I say, Goff comes out, moves the ball down well, and then blocking, like I say, Jamo, Reynolds, guys like that out on the screen, like I say, Laporta, all just make this lovely cushion for Amon-Ra. Just goes in untouched. No one even gets close to him. Like I say, our screens either often get blown up or they get blocked perfectly and go really well. Very little middle ground with us, but off more often than not, we do find a lot of success with them. And yeah, we regain the lead fairly comfortably. Like I say, both defenses right now are on the back foot. They're on the heels pretty much as soon as the ball is snapped. And that there's a lot of guys that are getting in behind people. And you just know it's going to be one of those last team with the ball wins the game, essentially. That we knew how that was going to be because the drives are taking 5, 6, 7 minutes. Like, you're lucky to get the ball twice again after this point.
Ash, do you agree? It kind of felt like it was going that way, didn't it, once they started rolling?
Yeah. Well, I said entering the game in the start, it would either be a blowout in our favour or it would be like this. So I wasn't surprised, especially since, and I'm going to highlight two plays that I highlighted on the live watch along with you, but I'm bringing it up again. So the tackle for loss by Derwin on the safety blitz. How did he know we were going to run the ball? Because we had Malcolm Rodriguez in the backfield. And until that point, every single time he was there, we ran the ball. So what does he do? He reads that, has the delayed blitz, and just as Goff's get a snap in the ball, he blitzes down, gets the tackle for loss, stalls that drive out. Then on the other side, defense. The coverage team literally highlighted the fact that Glenn kept rotating safeties down late. So what do the Chargers do? They see that tendency. They draw up a play that exactly exploits that, and it leads to a touchdown. This was that third quarter was a wake up for the team to sort of start doing some tendency breakers, start building off those plays. Okay, yeah, you have Malcolm there, so you do a play action pass, which you do later. This showed that the Chargers were starting to wake up, catching on to what we were doing. So it was time to shake things up a bit and put them into situations where they're getting confused rather than us with, as Ryan mentioned, the constant motion of Keenan Allen, getting him matched up against Campbell, getting him matched up against Kirby a couple of times, getting him away from Cam Sutton, because Sutton only got targeted, admittedly got targeted, it was five for six for a good amount of yardage and a touchdown, but decent coverage. He was the kind of guy that had the best chance of holding down Allen. And yet they kept moving him away to Jerry, to Kirby, to Tracy, to Campbell, where the matchup was just so much in their favour. It was just unfair. Like, we needed to start bracket coverage or man coverage. And even then, couldn't stop him. The only thing that could stop him was the injury.
Moving on for the rest of the game, last few possessions. I mean, there were only four apiece in the second half, because every time team charged the ball apart from the first possession, it went for points. It was a crazy, crazy game. Chargers scoring touchdowns in their last five possessions after not scoring a touchdown in their first four? Or am I making that up?
They've got one on this.
One, two, three, four, fifth possession. Yeah, I was right. No touchdowns in the first four, and then every single one of the next five. So, lines up 31-24. Herbert with a 13-yard scramble on third and five when the Lions had a great chance to not allow that and just about gets there away from pressure. Sutton then committed a DPI on Quentin Johnston for a 14-yard gain on third down and 11. Austin Ekeler went for 17. So did Quentin Johnston. They then had eight and goal plays in a row, including six from the one. They were given a fresh set of downs by a second DPI on Sutton in the drive. That one was weak as hell. Agree with the first one. Completely disagree with the second one. Finished off on fourth and one on the second fourth and one by a 1 yard touchdown by Quentin Johnston. Lovely pass, by the way, by Justin Herbert. No one with Quentin Johnston in the end zone, just completely on his own. But the timing's fantastic. PAT is good. 31 apiece. Lions come straight back out and score with a beautiful drive. Gibbs went for 14. Sam Laporta showed up late with 6 and 19. And on third down and one, and this time, Ash, Malcolm Rodriguez is in the game at fullback, along with two tight ends in the formation. And the man closest to the inline of the offensive line releases upfield. Brock Wright gets some separation, shows that 4.6 speed and goes to the house. For what was that, 30 odd yards, 29 yards? I can't remember what it was, but it was beautiful. It was 25 yards. Fourth down and one then for the Chargers on the Detroit 38. And Ash, I've got to give props to you calling the exact play that we did, going zero blitz. And a pass to Allen, who beats Sutton on the snap, all ends up and has the footwork to beat Kirby Joseph and goes for the touchdown. But it leaves us too much time on the clock. 3.5 minutes to go. Goff short to Raymond for 41 yards on basically like the first play of the possession puts us immediately in field goal range, which is just incredible play down the sideline, kind of tiptoeing. It was great. And then it's kind of slightly comfortable, or is it? First down and 10 leads to third and 14, which is just outside of field goal range. You're thinking, oh no, what are you going to do from here? If you go for fourth and 14, you're going to punt instead of going for a 55 yarder to try and win the game. But no. And you get 12 on third down with Amon-Ra St. Brown. Terrific play to give us a shot. And then on fourth down and two, Campbell decides to go for it, even though the analytics say apparently that you should kick the points. And they succeed getting it with Sam Laporta for 6. They kneel down for the field goal attempt, which is good from 41 yards, and the Lions win 41-38. Derwin James, to his credit, gets exceptionally close to blocking the kick after being able to jump over the offensive line who were trying to block it. If the offensive line touch him, it's a penalty. And we saw that before in a previous game where a team gifted Packers, us some points against the Packers.
Clay Walker.
But he entirely missed our offensive line. And to Patterson's credit, he gets it high enough that it just misses his fingertips, which is terrific. Ryan, coming to you first this time. Our defense had a couple of DPIs. We had, you know, 8 and goal plays to defend. And I thought they actually did really well in that series. So I think we were unlucky to come away conceding points there. But our offense just keeps rolling. And even though we went zero blitz in a sort of fuck it moment, that Raymond play put us in great position. And then we had the fourth down go for it instead of going for the points. What did he make of all of that to finish the game?
Yeah, this was pretty crazy. Like the conversion to third down, like the Herbert run, like on like third and 8. Barnes had him bound to rights, but he wafts an arm at him, whiffs on the only chance we get. That's the only closest we come to a sack all day. That, me, if we get him off the field there, I think we win this game comfortably. And at that point, like say, they go down the field, like say, he threads a nice ball over Kirby Keenan Allen, like say, you don't want that matchup. Like say, beat Sutton, get in behind Kirby, like, it's taking Canada for a baby. Some very questionable calls. I'll give a lot of credit to the defence at the goal line. Like you say, very dubious penalties. It's like the fates were looking down at us, like the Chargers will score because we'll bloody fucking make them. Like I say, their offence is going to be crap. We will keep giving them the ball at the 1 yard line until they do it. And yeah, the play they score on is so frustrating because, like I say, Quentin Johnston, there's no one within like 6 yards of him. He's just stood in front of the goalpost. Like, they just sneak him round and no one sees him escape. And it's just a little play up.
In terms of the invention of that play, though, it's the most inventive they've been, because if I remember rightly, it's a fake jet sweep, fake toss pass. And it's like, yeah, where was that 4 plays ago?
Yeah, but yeah, we're 7-8 players. We almost get the stand, which would have also potentially iced the game. But then, yeah, they score, they give us the ball back, and this has got to be the last drive of the game. Like, I'm thinking, whatever happens here, they can't get the ball back because the defense is blowing out its ass after 8 goal line players and concede. But yeah, that lovely, like, that little dig from the dig route on Cleve Raymond. And honestly, I thought, oh my God, he's taking it to the house. He's got like, he's like 23 mile an hour run. They need to do the next gen stats on how fast he was, because that was a blinding run. I say, puts in a great position there. And then, like, then, yeah, gets a bit difficult. Was there a penalty? Did the penalty move us back, I feel like, on first or second down? Because we're behind the chains, aren't we?
We're behind the chains because we had Montgomery run for... I remember
Tony Romo saying, like, whatever they do, like, you can't take a sack, no tackles for loss here.
And yeah, we had two tackles for loss.
He's forced back a couple of yards by them, good player. And then, yeah, it's crunch time, isn't it? It's time to put up or show up. So your options are, like, say, with like 1:40 left, do you kick a field goal on fourth and two and ask the charge, ask your defense, which wasn't stopping anything all day, to stop them getting in field goal range or scoring? Absolutely not. Campbell did not trust the defense at all at this point to stop the Chargers with only a 3-point lead. He says, I will lose the game by turning over on downs and they score, or we'll win the game by converting and killing the clock. And that's why he's got bigger bollocks than Brandon Staley. I say, he wears XL boxes. So that's just what he does. And yeah, it was a great call. Like I say, dialed up a little, sneak Sam Laporta out, just get him to sit down, get the ball, and yeah, kneel it out. And I had every faith in Riley Patterson too. Like I say, it's well in his range, it's 41. He's got the cross around his neck, he's holding on. He said he's saying a little psalm before, like, he knows he's going to be the game winner. Yeah, and yeah, he gets it high enough, drills it down the middle, and that was all she wrote. But yeah, that drive had a little bit of everything at the end. Big plays, they force us back, and then a big decision to make. If we kick the field goal and we give them the ball back with, like, what, one timeout, 1:30 they've had left, to try keep them out for the winner, I feel like we lose. I feel like their tempo was just too good on defense.
And I feel like the best case scenario is a tie. Like, maybe you stop them, but probably not outside field goal range. So, like, do you really want to play for a tie?
No. Dan Campbell don't play for ties or overtime. He wins or he loses, and he lives by the sword and dies by the sword. And yeah, he gets it. And yeah, we survive what was a very, very tricky, lopsided kind of game. So I breathe a huge sigh of relief. If that's the hardest game we play between now and Minnesota, I'll be very happy, and I think it might be.
Just quickly, the speed of that Raymond run was 20.37 miles per hour. So it was up there. And we had the two DPIs, we had the goal line stand by the Lions, which failed. We had the Brock touchdown, we had the Allen touchdown, and then the Lions drive to finish it all. It was a terrific end to the game, considering we won it.
It was. You know, we just sort of started going end to end, and, you know, last possession was sort of going to win with this. But again, going to call this the, you know, their touchdown, obviously, when they have the 8 goal line plays. You're right that the first one's a penalty on Sutton, but it's holding. It's not pass interference. Massive difference. One is a couple of yards. One is a spot foul, and a lot more is given on to it. They completely messed that call up. It's not DPI. It's holding. The second one in the end zone is the most diabolical of the lot. Like, he barely even brushes the dude's shirt, and the guy, the sideline unit at the back, it's already halfway out his pocket before he's even there. You get that they're just waiting to throw the damn thing. And it's a shame, because the defense made, what, 7 stops in a row. They did really well, considering how much tap they'd taken all game. They laid their stall out there, and they played really well. And eventually, the law of averages, 8 shots from the one, you're going to get something right. And yeah, they get it right at the end. They done. Dive right down into the book. And you know what? I don't care if he's wide open. It's like, they've made 7 stops. They shouldn't have to do more than that. But again, it's such bad officiating, and it just annoys me. All these blown calls in the Chargers' favor. Anyhow, new Lions, they don't care about all this. You know, the refs can screw them over. They'll just smile at them and say, fine, we'll score some more points. do it again. Love the offense coming out, just bits of run, bits of passing. Laporta comes to the party. You know, to this point, he's not done much. But, you know, during the game, every guy had their moment where they came forward and stood up when they needed to. Amon-Ra did it, Gibbs did it, Monty did it, Laporta did it. Even Raymond, right at the very end, does it. When they are asked and their number is called, great. And I love the call for the Brock touchdown. It's just like, load up the heavy set. The Chargers bit on that thing like it was candy. They went straight for it. Everybody's in. No one sees the tight end leak out. Perfect throw. It's like, Ben Johnson, you are a beautiful man with a mind which is just like the Garden of Eden, and I want to see it and I want to marry it. They just didn't know what to do with it. Then Chargers score again. And what really annoyed me, because if I'm remembering this rightly, on the touchdown pass, they take a timeout before they do that. And what happens on the end of that timeout when they come in? Two defenders running on the pitch. They're not set. They're not ready. They're disorganized. And you should not be disorganized on a defensive play coming out of a timeout. You should have the play ready. You should have everybody ready to go. And they just look so disorganized. And that really annoyed me. And while I'm not going to go in heavy on Glenn like others do, stuff like that annoys me. You can't be unprepared after a timeout on such a big play like that. And they were. They just looked like they didn't know what the hell they were doing. And it wound the hell out of me. But saying all that, you've put yourself in a position with your aggressiveness that you've got the potential to have the ball last. You can run the clock out and you can seal the game. And they did. Raymond starting it off, it's great. Again, Goff just making throws under pressure in a big game situation. You're like, oh God, is this where one goes wrong? He misses an open guy. No, hits Raymond in stride, right down the line, sets you up. And the call to go for it on fourth down is just, this is where I love Dan, because they said, you know, this is where he learns from his mistakes, because there was the clip I saw earlier that from the start of last season, I can't remember which game it was exactly, but he hooked up a field goal call where he called a field goal from 55 Vikings. Yards. We missed it. Yeah, we screwed that game up. And Dan said afterwards, I regret that. I regret that entirely. Not trusting my guys to go out there, do the job, get the yards they needed. And I remember we're all pissed at that game. And it's almost like, I bet that was the first thing that came to his mind when that fourth and second was there. I bet he remembered straight back to that. And he's like, you know what? I'm not going to make that mistake again. I'm going to trust my offense. And I think this is why all the guys on offense look so confident, because he has the utmost belief in them from fourth and six, you know, from the second goal line, fourth and one, when they'd failed on one. He shows them his utmost support and the players rise to the occasion. And for this one, Laporta again, like, man, I love the guy so much. You'd think he was a six-year vet at this point. You'd think he was on a contract. You'd think he was on a pro contract, not halfway through his first season. So calm, so collected, grabs it up high, and they kneel the game out and they hit a field goal. And how many times have teams done that to us over the years? That just kind of was really the point where I'm like, Dan's just, he's grown so much as a play caller. He's called this to perfection. He's done everything he needs to. Don't give Herbert the ball. Your defense is struggling. Don't give it him. Run the clock out. Kick the sucker. Get the win. That is what good teams do. And yesterday they turned from a good team into a great team with that, because that is what the great ones do. They go out there and they take those wins and they get the hell out of there. And that's what this team, and I loved it. So for all the stuff that happened with the defense, I was just so impressed with the offensive mentality and just how they never lost faith and they went for it. And it's a great win. And all these people who go, oh, the Lions haven't beaten anybody under, you know, over 500 and stuff like this year. Screw the lot of you. The Chargers are a good team when you want them to be. But when the Lions beat them, oh, no, they're not a good team. They've won three games. No, don't change the narrative. They are a damn good side with some damn good players. And I think everybody agrees they are badly coached. They are horrendously coached for the talent they have. But you've still got to go out there and beat them. And we did. And we did it perfectly. So I'm very happy overall. Yeah, there's a lot to work on. But the way they did the end of that game was tremendous. And just, they look at the peak of the powers on offense.
Ash, do you agree that this shows kind of the maturation of the team, this sort of last quarter of the game where they just kind of do what they need to?
Yeah, well, I pretty much said what Ant said live yesterday, going for that fourth down, kneeling for the field goal. I said, this is Dan learning from last year with the Vikings game. Showed. Even, and I did call it, because it's the zero blitz for the touchdown. I can back that because, as I said on the live stream, either you blitz, you get a tackle for loss and you force them to kick a field goal, or you zero blitz, they score a touchdown then and you've got enough time to do whatever you want with your playbook. What happens? They score a touchdown. Fair enough. Great throw from Herbert on that touchdown. We come out. We score. We run the ball down, the clock down, enough to where we can kick that final second touchdown. Field goal, I mean, sorry. And then you had the touchdown to Brock Wright, showing those tendency breakers, having Malcolm there, clues the charges, and they think, oh, God, they're running it. And yeah, right, just sort of ducks down and see if he's going to block, just sneaks past the linebackers, and it's just an easy lob pass for Goff into a touchdown. Just Ben dipping really into like his Bennett bag of tricks, calling the perfect plays at the perfect time. It was just a great marriage of both sides. Because as I say, Glenn, for the most part, yeah, not good, not a cool game. But I can, as I said, I back the zero blitz, yeah, led to a touchdown. But it was the right call. Because if you let if you put out a zone defense, for example, that gives them 5 yards, they can grind down the clock even more. It's just putting us in a worse and worse position. It's like where the thing that happened with the Eagles a couple of weeks ago against the Jets, where it's like, oh, yeah.
Oh. Come in, Ashley Soden. Oh. You're back. There we go.
Oh, fuck. How long have I been gone?
Oh, only 2 seconds. 2 seconds.
Oh, thank God. I got scared. I was like, I've had a great rant about play calling. So I've been gone. But yeah, just letting them score. I know it happened to the Eagles a couple of weeks ago where they let the Jets score and it didn't work out in their favour. Usually it works in your favour and it showed here today.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about it on there. It's not even third down. If it's third down, it's a bad play because they get another try. Because it's fourth down and one, it's a boom or bust play. But like you say, if they're able to... It's from the 38 and we managed to go 32 yards in like 12 plays. They could absolutely have ground that clock down to like 40 seconds to go with us having no timeouts. And then it's like, yeah, we can do that. But that's really tough. So we gave ourselves a chance one way or the other.
See, this is true, but you've also got to look at the bigger picture. They weren't ready from a timeout.
Yeah, no,
that yeah, was... I know what you're saying, Ash, there. Just I'm looking up at this for the thing. That is not acceptable. That is where there are legitimate questions here. You should not be in that situation where you're hurrying guys off and hurrying them on and you're not set. So, yeah, while we gave ourselves time, that is great, but it was also a really bad play on our part, although it worked out well.
Yeah.
All right. Game themes, folks, and going for it on fourth down at the end. We've kind of said it a little bit, but we were inundated with people on the live stream saying, I do not understand Dan going for it on fourth and two. And the analytics agrees with them. Your win percentage increases by kicking the field goal marginally. But myself and Ash were both saying, we agree with the call. And I think you just perfectly said that you agree with the call. So, Ryan, right call or not right call to go for it there? You're in field goal range. You're going to take the lead.
Oh, totally right call for it. The only thing that's worked all game is offense. So why would you go away from it? If we don't convert it and they go down the field, they rinse the clock and they kick again with a field goal and we lose, I accept it. Like, I've accepted all the fourth downs he went for in the first, like, 18 games, and he got some of them wrong, and it cost us games. I accepted it then. Media has a field day, but Dan's got the thickest skin in the USA. He does not care. Like I say, he will go for it, where he thinks it's right, or whether the analytics or whatever tell him it's not right. He doesn't do numbers. He don't do stats. They don't interest him. He goes with his gut and he says, we're going to win this game here and now. because he wants to end this back and forth tussle. So totally the right decision. And I can swallow it and accept it if he goes for it and it don't happen. Like I said, but if we kick a field goal and then we play soft zone defense and they go down the field and score a touchdown, I can't live with that. That's the way I can't lose. I lose on our terms. We go for it, we turn it over on downs, and then we lose. That's fine, we went for it.
Let me take it even further, because then we had people in the chat going, okay, fine, you go for it. Why are we now kneeling it down? I mean, we're still 40 yards away. Do you agree with the kneel downs, or would you have run some more plays?
Don't risk the ball. Like, that's number one. Don't risk the ball.
No.
Look what...
We saw what happened with Craig Reynolds. We got down at the goal line and the mysterious fumble. You do not risk that kind of
shit.
Okay, so... What happened to the Hurricanes a month ago? Like, they ran the ball like idiots in a college game and they fumbled it on the last play that they had where they could have just knelt the thing out.
Let me pose this question to you, because this is what we were kind of debating in the chat yesterday. Ryan and Ant, at what position with Riley Patterson as your kicker does the advantage outweigh the downside of running the ball there? How far out does the field goal have to be before you go, actually, a few more yards would be nice, it's worth risking it?
Outside of 40 yards.
40-yard field
within,
goal.
I prefer to be within 40 for him.
So it was a 41.
About 45, 46. After that, I'm kind of out.
So at 41, you're borderline.
I'm borderline, but at the same time, you're just giving yourself a chance to win. Like, you're the only one who can win in guaranteed time there. At worst, you're missing, it goes to overtime. They don't get the ball back. So in that game situation, I'm very happy for them to do it. And, you know, it's just like the 4th-and-2, I'm very happy for him to do it, because this is where analytics are bogus. They don't take into account game situations in terms of, like, how the game's gone, the emotions. It's very clear that you can't stop the Chargers on offense. Analytics don't count for that. You cannot give them the ball back at all. You cannot even risk giving them back. So that's why you go for it there. And that's why you kneel it out as well. Do not give one of them a chance to punch it out. Because all of a sudden, you know, you might have 40 seconds on the clock and they're 35. You need, 20 yards for them to hit a field goal? And that's all they need to win. Dan said it. Do not give them the ball back. And the best way to not give them the ball back is kneel it out. So he just made the right call every time. He did it the entire day. There's not one single call he made that I disagreed with yesterday. I thought he was absolutely perfect and he needed to be. And sticking to our identity, like I said on the preview, be us. We are an aggressive team who run the football down your throat and hit you hard. And he stuck to that mantra all day, and that's why we won. So I got no issues with him.
I think for me, the line is probably for Patterson about 52, 53 yards. At that point, I then think it's worth going for it. But I buy Ant's argument even more. I think that the risk of turning the ball over is so great that I'd rather miss the field goal and go to overtime than I would rather potentially fumble the ball. Because there's enough time on the clock at that point with them having timeouts that you fumble the ball there, they're going to have a shot. So even at 52, I'm kind of like, Patterson's hit from 52 this year for us. And I mean, maybe that kick was tipped slightly, but it still went over. I think that Patterson's got just about enough leg to make that worth it. And if that gives us a 50-50 shot of winning the game, I still think that's better than a 5% chance of a fumble. So yeah, Ash, where's your line at for go for it, not go for it?
Yeah, about 45 yards, roughly. Like, because I remember me and you having this discussion as well, quite related to the kicker thing, me saying about Jake Moody that Patterson's a better kicker than Jake Moody.
He is. I'm not having it any other way. Moody doesn't have much leg. As far as I saw at Michigan anyway, I thought he was not that great from beyond 50. If I remember rightly, I could be completely wrong, but I think so. If there are Michigan fans in the chat, I'm sure you will correct me on that point, but there we go. All right, let's move on to the next point, which is Lions firing on offense on all cylinders. And we've talked about that, but I'm going to take it position by position because I think it's worth highlighting every single facet of this. Quarterback, to start with, Jared Goff. Is this his best performance of the season so far? Because we've had a couple of really good ones. But this felt different to me. What do you think, guys?
I think you can box it. I think most of our guys had career days. Like, Goff, I think, had a great day, one of the best he's had as a Lion. I think Monty had his career day with us. Gibbs had his career day with us. Amon-Ra, probably one of his best performances for us in the grand scheme of things, given how clutch it was. Laporta, most clutch game he's had for us. I think everybody, like, performed to the highest physical level they could. I think Penne absolutely bodying Bosa the entire game to the point that he got nothing. We all had as many pressures on the day as he did, and we're across the ocean. Like,
Bosa's been credited with one. I think it was...
They probably just gave it him to stop him coming and hunting them down.
It was against Decker, though, so...
Yeah, but I mean, I think they all had... I think pretty much everybody had almost one of their best performances for us. That's how good it was. I do genuinely think that. Like, this was Gibbs' breakout game. It was Monty's biggest game for us. Goff's biggest game. So, I mean, he was unflappable. I don't think he did one thing that was like, I got concerned about. I think every drive we came out after the Chargers leveled up, I never lost faith in him to be able to get us back in front. He's unflappable.
Ryan, Jared Goff, it's becoming hard to ignore.
Yeah, he might not. Well, the numbers are really good, like whether you think the numbers are MVP or not. But when you think about what MVP stands for, he's in the race. He's the MVP of the Lions. Like you say, he is doing exactly what he needs to for Detroit. That Lamar Jackson's not doing much more than Goff is in any other real asset. Like you say, it's anyone that just discredits him or says it can't be in the race, it's ludicrous. Like, he's taken the bull by the horns. He's leading one of the most potent offenses in the league. And it doesn't matter what the record is of the team that's put in front of him. He can't control that. We can't control that. If they're losing, whether they're winning, they're both below 500, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Jared Goff is having an all-pro year. And it would be, right now, I think he's the best quarterback in the NFC. I think right now he'd be the Pro Bowl quarterback. The quarterback one, like I say, the fans, you'd give him it over Jalen Hurts, because Hurts is not taking as much on his shoulders as Jared is. And yeah, yesterday was pretty much flawless. Every ball was basically on target, whether it was dropped or broken up or anything. The offensive line gave him the cleanest pocket to work on probably in the year. Jonah Jackson had by far his best game of the year. He pulled and made some crucial blocks. I say he made some big holes when coming across the formation. The only real guy that was quiet on offense was Josh Reynolds, I say. And that says a lot about everyone else, because that means they took some pressure off him, because he's having to be a guy last few weeks. And if he has a quiet game and the Lions score 41, that's pretty telling about everyone else because of how important he's been to us. But yeah, everyone was dominant. Like I say, Jared Goff, he's earning the contract. Like I say, it's going to be hard to begrudge him whatever number they finally settle on, the finer details. I won't really be able to pick any fault with it. Like I said, because as of right now, all being well injuries, he's going to be the quarterback going into 2026, 2027. Like I say, all things going well. So yeah, I'd say right now he's the fourth best quarterback in football. I think that's a fair case to make.
Actually, Goff yesterday, I think what was just impressive for me wasn't just the number of completions or yards or touchdowns, but it just seemed like every throw he made was in stride, and it was not just catchable, but it was on target. Like, that accuracy percentage, you can just see how many of his catches are good throws.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I'm going to be honest, Bucs game for me is still his best game in inverted commas, because the lack of run games, it was all on him and he still managed to do it. But this was, that's not to say this was not a damn good game. This is up there. This, Bucs, Panthers, three dominant performances by him. completely dominant. Like, as you say, on target throws, checking the line scrimmage. Again, I'm going to bring it up again. The fact that he recognized that the no one knew what they were doing on that play, so it checks into a play that he knew would work, and it turns into a 75-yard touchdown. The fact he's got complete and utter command of the offense, not only executing it, but also making those checks. Like, flashback to 2 years ago, when the coach was saying, we're having to make the offense simpler for Goff to call. What an evolution we have gone from that point to now in 2 years. We've gone from him, us being worried, why are we having one word play calls for him? This is not a good sign, to him checking the line, the play at the line for a 75-yard touchdown. Just, this is the why the trade for him should now be known as the Stafford Goff trade. Because, yeah, okay, Rams got a Super Bowl winning quarterback with Stafford, run a wing with him. We got Jared Goff and we turned him from arguably a dump of a QB, people thinking him as down in that sort of 20 to 32 range where, yeah, K can win you games, but is he really that good? He's a top 10, top 8, top 6 QB in the league right now. And yeah, he's going to get Pro Bowl votes. Hopefully we'll get some All-Pro votes, first or second team. And he should get some MPV votes. Certainly should. Because him, Lamar, Stroud, those are the kind of QBs that are really doing stuff for their teams. I know, obviously, Ravens have got a really good defense to work off. But Lamar's not really working with much. His best receiver is a really small rookie from Boston College. And a geriatric Odell Beckham has tore two ACLs in the past 3 seasons. And he's putting up numbers. Goff is up there with him right now. But because he's obviously for us, he's just got to keep showing it to people. We know. It's just about the national media now. And they'll slowly start to wake up again after the dump of the Ravens game.
You guys have adequately already talked about the running backs, wide receivers and tight ends, I think. So I'm just going to skip to the other side of this, which is the incredible performance and what a difference a bye makes of the offensive line. And I know you're a big fan of trench play. Getting Jackson back, getting Ragnow back, Glasgow being in his proper spot, although he can play all three, that right guard spot he just seems to be so natural at. Sewell maybe had his best game of the year. Decker clearly had his best game of the year. This was an absolute masterclass of O-line play.
This is what Brad Holmes promised when he first came to Detroit. I'm going to build the trenches and that's how we're going to win games. And you finally get to see the fruition of it as we can put out a first five, like our starting five, all relatively healthy. And this is what you get. We call them a top three unit in the league. Hell, they're a top two unit in the league and they ain't two. That's where they're at this moment in time. Penei Sewell is an All-Pro this year. And if Penei Sewell does not get an All-Pro nod this year, I don't give a damn about Lane Johnson. If Penei Sewell does not get an All-Pro appearance, then something's wrong. He is playing that well. You come up against Bosa, Mack, Tui Peloto, all these guys, and you shut them out dead. You give them nothing. You are battering them around, you know, like they're playthings. And you do that for an entire game. They love running behind him. Like, the running backs love going in his direction because they're like, I'm going to have, like, the Red Sea part in front of me. That's how good he is. I love that. And then just everybody was really pulling their weight in this one. Because we forget, this is a great Chargers D-line. Like, it's got some real good talent on there. You know, there are three or four guys you can easily pick out. They've got really good nose tackle. And you felt like it was terrible. Like, the only big play I remember one of their D-line making was Nick Williams. And Nick Williams doesn't make big plays. So that was what we reduced them to. And as I say, just they were so technically efficient in everything they did. The run blocking, the way they sealed blocks, the way they moved the line of scrimmage. They showed you Monty's first run of the game and they relocated the D-line from the Chargers 4 yards back before he hits the hole. Like, that's how dominant they were over him. And for anyone saying that they want to go and see Jonah test the market, you're not going to get that if you let him test the market. Don't spend all this time building an offensive line and then let it leave. You saw how big he is to this team. Like, the fourth and six doesn't happen without his ability to motion across and technically block and just absolutely take a guy out of the equation. You have got a good starting five. You keep them together. Like, pure domination is everything here, and it's just because they're fast, they are technically sound, and they will just smack you in the face. They didn't do anything wrong in this game. Goff had so much time to work and do his damage. The running backs, Monty didn't have this much room in 5 years with Chicago. Like, we gave him more room in one game than he'll have ever had there in his life, and you just see the effect it's having on him. So when he's getting into the open field, he's got energy. He's not beat down. He's not bruised. He's got all this, you know, he's got all this in there to go and make big extra yardage. They were great, and I can't fault any one of them. And yeah, this is what happens when you get your starting five together. You dominate. And they are the best offensive line in the league, bar none.
Ryan, it felt like a massive shift from the promise that they've shown and the dominance they've shown on like half the line to having it all together.
Yeah, it's they've settled on an offensive line, and when Dan said last week in inverted commas, Glasgow's won the job, I believed him, and he's right. Even if Vitai is fully healthy right now, Graham Glasgow is the starting right guard. It's his best position, and he's come in, and he's not just been comfortable. He's not just been a plug and play average backup. He has risen to the level of everyone around him, and they have helped him do that. The familiarity he feels, and right now it's like just one big wall. Like I said, there is no weak link in his offensive line, and that's what makes it, yes, the 1A, 1B line in the league, and everything the Lions want to do predicates behind offensive line, and that's why you do everything in your power to keep it together. And that's why you sit down, you speak to John's agent, and you get a deal done early before deals start happening and the market trends. So I think this should be starting as conversations right now. If the Chargers had this offensive line, we'd be talking about a different result today. And I said, Justin Herbert, this is the line you could only dream of having. And 30 other teams in the league could only dream of having. And previous GMs and that, this is the, obviously previous regimes aren't highly thought of, but this is the gift that was bestowed upon us from other people. Three parts of the line, they got us. So for that, I'm forever thankful.
Yeah, Ash, it's something to kind of comprehend, really, isn't it? That this is a legacy of a previous regime, and yet they've identify the good parts of it. They flushed out the weak, but they did keep the strong and identify, you know, who those players were, and really have enhanced it to the point where it can hang with anyone right now. And Goff is absolutely thriving. The running game is thriving because of exactly what they built up there.
Exactly. It's mad to even think that the fourth part of that line was ran out the door by the previous regime. For admittedly, yeah, got a big Donnie Mutton contract, right? Like, got himself some money, but then he's come back. I've seen Eric tweet today, quote tweet one of the various clips that's doing the rounds right now of our offensive line just bullying the Chargers defensive line, saying, Graham Glasgow, I just wanted to play with my friends. This is why. Communication on the offensive side, chemistry, it's okay. That's why, obviously, Vitai stick around, because he's such a good mentor for Saul. But Saul's evolving past that now. And it was so funny to me, in a way, to watch Saul, as we say, stand up, Mac, Bosa, TT. But Rashawn Slater, the one that everyone said was the better of the tackles after their first couple of seasons, didn't play so well. Hutch mostly was lined up against Pipkins, but Slater got worked as well by at some points. I think Julian got beaten with him a couple of times. That says a lot. Like, this offensive line is just, as we say, yeah, the Eagles probably were still be seen as the best one because they've been a bit more healthy throughout the year. But we're damn close behind right now. And as Roy says, there's no weak link. Like, okay, PFF graded Jonah poorly. Don't know what they're seeing. It's one of those where they're just, PFF must have been watching a completely different game to us, because It's like 47 grade for Jonah. What? What?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Right, let's move it on to the last bit before we give out the cigars. Defense, as we were talking about before, frisky early, not giving up a touchdown in the first four possessions, then can't make a stop in the next five. Herbert and Allen together were, you know, chef's kiss, really. They were just, it was beautiful to watch. Even as a Lions fan, it was like, yeah, that's just fucking good. And, you know, was it a complete shift? I mean, what do you guys think was the difference in those? Was it just that we were blowing? Was it communication? Does Aaron Glenn need to consider his position, as, you know, some fans are saying out there, which I just... I'll leave my thoughts on that to the end. But Ryan, coming straight back to you, mate, defensively, I know that you said at the top of the show you weren't happy about certain elements of what was going on there.
It was a mixture of everything. So what we saw against Las Vegas was Cam Sutton got Devontae Adams, but Devontae Adams never motioned. He stands there still, and you can play man coverage, and he manned him up with him. This week, the Chargers said, we can't let them do that. So more often than not, we're going to get him and we're going to move him across the line and see, does someone follow him? If someone follows him, that's fine. Go somewhere else. If someone don't follow him, let's go straight after him. Let's go straight to Keenan Allen. Let's see who they pick, who picks him up in this zone. If we get him across the middle, does he go up against Jack Campbell, Alex Anzalone? Do they bring up a safety? Like I say, they were playing chess at line of scrimmage with motions, like I say, with speed ins, speed outs, keeping the Detroit defense, mainly secondary, completely off balance. Like I say, obviously, we like to bring the safeties up and down, which does work as well. So, like I say, they can sniff out those tosses, the screens, they can blow players up. But it will also hurt us because they will see it one too many times and they will go after it. And there will be a hole there to be exploited. And offensively, the Chargers, really good. I say they knew what they were doing constantly. And it never got to a point where, or Glenn, or they felt comfortable to just say, you take him, you take Keenan Allen, you follow him wherever you go, you run through traffic. If he catches the ball, it's on you. Should we have done that at some point? Could have tried it. Would it have made any difference? It's impossible to say. But collectively as a unit, just didn't do a good job of passing off guys, letting them pick up through zones, readjusting after the motion. Like I say, losing just responsibilities. Like I say, things like that. So everything, the Chargers beat us before the ball was snapped. Everything they did. And later on in the game, like I say, we answered where there was a play like where we'd just got two defensive players running in off the sideline and the ball was basically ready to be snapped. And Aleem McNeil, I think he'd only just got his hand in the ground. They just caught us flagging in the second half. They're just such a well-run unit and we just didn't know what was coming at times. So they played us like kippers. But Glenn just watched it play out sometimes and it was just, could have tried anything, like saying it was just really frustrating. It just felt like at no point did he say for this next drive, let's throw it out the window, let's try something different. It kind of just sat on it and kind of just hoped that we'd make a play or someone would step up and make a great individual effort instead of trying to combat what they were trying to show us. And it was very frustrating to watch.
And I know that you were saying, you know, a win is a win, but looking a bit deeper, you know, are there questions to answer for Glenn, you know, back to the chalkboard and trying to diagnose what the hell happened here? Because there was lots going on. It wasn't just, oh, we played bad. You know, there's lots of moving parts here.
There is, and you know what? There were some good aspects. One, the run defense was good again. Like, they're running 3 yards a carry. Austin Eckler is a very good running back. They had to get very creative to get him involved in the game. There are a couple of big ones. But outside of that, I thought they were very stout. And the great thing is, that then forces you into favorable situations where you can go and pass rush the quarterback, and you know, you can drop guys in coverage, you can make it tougher for them. The issue I have here is, like Dan said, Ben was two steps ahead of the Chargers every step of the way with his offensive game plan. The problem was, so were they on us. Like, they were always one step ahead. And I know, going back over the years, the criticisms we've had about Aaron is his ability to adjust in game and to, you know, react to what the opponent is doing. As has so rightly been said, they were moving the guys around. They were moving them onto our different guys, finding the matchups. And the worrying thing is that we can't seem to react to it. But more so than that, we're struggling with some of the, and I hate this word because of Patricia, the idiot, the basic fundamentals of what you're doing, like getting a play call on the field and being set and ready. Again, I've mentioned it twice, but it just annoys me. It's unforgivable that you come from a timeout and you are caught so unawares, especially for a touchdown, because if we end up not getting that fourth down and they come back and kick a field goal and win the game, we lose because of that call and how poorly executed it was by the defense. These are fine margins in this league, and those are the problems that concern me. I mean, you know, a lot of teams are going to give up 30-plus to the Chargers. It's just how good they are, but the way you do that was concerning. So, yeah, he needs to go back to the drawing board, and he needs to find ways to be able to adapt to grow in situations in-game. I just think that's the problem. It's the in-game changes are not there. Ben Johnson has shown that he can do it. Aaron now needs to show that he can do it, because we just don't look ready and we don't look prepared. And the better teams are going to dice us up. And if the offense doesn't come to play, then we're going to struggle when we face the better teams like the Cowboys. They're not going to let us off if we're doing stuff like that, and we've got to go there and, you know, trust us to go there. But there's just little things that are bothering me with him that he's not getting better at. Having said that, like I said, I'm still very happy with the way they're defending the run. And there are portions in the game where the defense looks good. Like the goal line stand was really good. The first few drives were really good. And that's what annoys me, because I know they can be good. And we've seen they can be good. But we're playing big boy football now. We're playing playoff football. And we can't be making these mistakes. I'm still with him. I said at the start of the season, he's got the season. Like, when he's done at the end of the year, let's see where he's at. Let's see what the numbers are doing. Let's see what the situation's like. And let's see the overall performance. But this has got to stop. The unpreparedness has got to stop. The issues have got to stop.
Ash, what do you make of this all?
So I know, obviously, I've put it in the Discord that Dan has attributed the second half defense to a lack of communication. But I think it's also just down to game plan. I'm just going to read a quick tweet from Next Gen Stats. Keenan Allen caught 7 of his 8 targets against zone coverage for 118 yards and 2 touchdowns en route to a team-leading 11 receptions for 175 yards in Week 10. Justin Herbert has generated a plus 39.3 EPA targeting Allen against zone this season, the most of any quarterback wide receiver duo in the NFL. So if Next Gen Stats knew that, that's data that's available to the team. So as much as I have loved our move towards zone this season, giving our defensive backs a bit more time to react and that, I was calling for the game more, we need man coverage. Because we said we were just motioning Allen across. Like, there was one point where I saw it, I think it was in the fourth quarter on that massive drive the Chargers had, where they ground out by 8 minutes on the clock, where they motioned Allen and I could see something going from him. And I literally applauded, was like, finally, we're doing match coverage. Because we were just playing too much soft zone. They were finding it. Allen was able to just run his routes perfectly to find the holes in those zones. And he was getting open. There was no adjustments from there. And that's the one thing I know we said Glenn hasn't been doing it. But there has been times this season where Glenn has done really well at adjusting to what the offense is showing him and putting the best personnel and packages out there to beat it. Bucks game, Panthers game, Raiders game for the most part after that iffy time during the second quarter where they just kept running Jacobs down the middle. He has shown that he's able to adjust, but for some reason this week, it just wasn't there. And perhaps it might be that we found it is really his ultimate kryptonite is a mobile QB who can pass the ball, because we've seen it a bit too often now over these past few years. Herbert, Geno Smith, Mahomes to an extent, Josh Allen, so on and so forth. A QB who can pass, do all the throws, but still, when it comes to pressure, he's able to evade it and maybe scramble for a bit. We just don't know what to do against them because it's just too much for us to handle. Which is a Russian QB who can't pass, like the QB we're facing next week, we can handle that. When it's a pocket passing statue who doesn't have that much mobility but can do all the throws, like Baker Mayfield, we can handle that. But the second you introduce the two together, our defense just goes to shit. And that's something that hope we should have found out by now. We should have had some strategies to beat that. Because when it comes to the playoffs, Jalen Hurts will be introduced. We're playing Dak later this season. He's mobile. We need to work it out because it might be one and done in the playoffs if we can't work it out.
I think it's a really interesting conundrum because the thing is, in the second half of this game, when they went five straight on touchdown drives, it's not like we didn't put ourselves in good situations. It wasn't like they were converting every first down they had for another first down. Like we had, what was it? We had a third and five. We had the Jerry DPI. We had two Sutton DPIs. Quite a lot of these calls were bogus in the first place. We had eight and goal, you know, plays where they did terrifically well. We had the zero blitz, which, you know, I love the call, didn't work, but I think it's the right decision. And, you know, sometimes they're just not executing properly. When it comes to Aaron Glenn, I'd like to see a bit more adjustment, as Ash rightly points out that, you know, they didn't go to a lot of man really, when maybe they could have worked out that that might have been a beneficial thing to do earlier. But on an individual basis, they made some really good plays. And what the problem was is they couldn't string a sequence of four together in the entire second half. But it's not to detract from the fact that they still put the Chargers in tough situations, which they came through. And at the end of the day, when you're facing someone of the quarterback quality that they have in Justin Herbert, all you need is one quarterback and one receiver on the same page. And we've done it with Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown to basically everyone in the last 18 months. Perfect coverage sometimes doesn't stop that connection. And yeah, I want to see some more adjustments. It's not to disclaim Aaron Glenn of all blame here. I think Aaron Glenn called a reasonable game. The start of the game was terrific. And there were some really good plays in the second half and just couldn't string four together. And that sucks. But if you keep putting teams in those situations, they're going to come good. There's two really big problems for me. One is you can't convert pressure into sacks. It's been a consistent issue for us. And people go, oh, you know, sacks aren't the biggest indicator of success. Pressures are. And it's like, yeah, on an individual basis, if you're looking at how good a player has been, pressure is more important than sacks. When it comes to affecting a game in wins, you need sacks to stop progressing the ball. And we are getting the pressures. Herbert was under a huge amount of pressure in this game. I mean, I think there's only 14 or so pressures by us. But, like, he was under pressure and he was escaping quite a lot and getting out of structure. But there were arm tackles, they were getting in his face, and he was delivering. Herbert was terrific in this game. He was a fantastic quarterback. So there's that. And there is tempo. And I think that the Chargers have identified something in the Lions that other teams are going to come and exploit. And I will be very surprised if for the rest of the season, we do not see a huge amount of tempo around against this defense. We can't substitute, get them gassed. Because I think we're really going to struggle with this. I've not seen a team go like this at us in some time. And we struggle to handle it. And I think that's the reason why we couldn't string the four plays together in a row. So they need to sort
that. Do you know what the playoffs doesn't care for, though? Three good plays in four.
Yeah,
doesn't
exactly.
care. It doesn't. You need four in four. You need consistency. And I find it very hard to believe that Aaron Glenn is completely devoid of blame here when one, we're talking about the pass rush, has been forever trying to get to the point where we're converting, not making pressures. I know Luke's in the chat, and I know Luke is more fed up than anybody of pressures. Like, they mean nothing. They didn't in this. They had chances to sack her, but they let him go. It's a consistent problem with this team. That falls on the DC. You've got a problem with tempo. That falls on the DC. He's the one who's meant to prepare them. He's the one calling the plays. He's the one where the organization, it comes from him. And because they're substituting late, because they're not ready, that's on him, not the players. So these are issues with the defensive coordinator. And again, good plays doesn't matter in the playoffs if you can't be consistent. And that comes down to the coordinator. So he's got a lot to prove. It doesn't matter whether he's getting them in situations where it's bad, you know, it's bad for the offense. If they keep getting out of it, who cares? No one remembers. There's a lot he's got to work on.
Let's move on to the final bit here. Apart from discussing the remainder of Sunday's games, we've got a handout for this one, the Cigars and Subpars. So who do you want to give a shout out to on the Lions team, fellas? Ryan, let's start with you.
Malcolm Rodriguez. Because I said I hated the thought of him at fullback. He didn't really gel. He looked out of place in his first game where he played it. Like I said, I didn't like it. Was it against Vegas we saw a few of them at fullback? And
Ravens,
yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't look good. It was his first time. He looked nervous and he didn't look like he knew quite trust what he was doing. Looked much better yesterday. Got some good blocks. Understands how to use his body and how he can be effective in disrupt defense and just create a little bit of enough room. And his role on defense is diminishing. Like I say, it in last few weeks, it's evaporated. And that's because the likes of Derek Barnes, Campbell, and it can't be helped. It's natural. That was what was going to happen when they drafted his predecessors. But he's finding a way to make himself useful. And that is how you keep yourself on a team. And that's why we've not designated Cabinda to return yet, even if it's helpful. Maybe this is terrible news for Jason. But on special teams and offense, Malcolm is going to carve a role out for himself. I'm very happy because I like the guy. And if for any reason he didn't find himself here in Detroit, he would be scooped up. He would never clear waivers. No chance, sir. Whatever facet we can get him into the game, I'm pretty sure he's going to catch a touchdown this season. I will put, if anyone wants to wager me £20 in the chat, I'll tell you Malcolm Rodriguez scores a touchdown this season. If anyone thinks he will. I think they will have a trick play designed up for him already. Ben Johnson will be drafting a little play up for him.
Malcolm Rodriguez had 5 snaps on offense. He had a 67.7 grade. Malcolm Rodriguez had 5 snaps on defense. He had a 91.9 grade on defense. Malcolm Rodriguez had a 66.3 grade on special teams on 16 snaps. That was the highest special teams grade. He was number 1 on special teams, number 1 on defense, and number 10 on offense, but with a good grade. Like, that's a terrific performance by the boy. So I love the shout out. The reason why I laughed straight away is I knew that Ash was going that way. And I had an inkling that you might go that way as well. So I just thought it'd be funny if I let Ryan go first over Ash. So Ash, I want to come to you second, just because I felt like I wronged you a little bit there. Who are you picking out for a cigar?
Well, since my guy was good, because I was going to go into a brilliant tirade about how Ben Johnson's been watching one of the best college offenses this year. He's been doing a similar thing with a linebacker playing fullback. One of the only few players last year to have a receiving, rushing, and defensive touchdown, DJ Lundy. But I guess I'm going to have to put all that to the wayside. Brock Wright. He was someone who, before the bye, you did it to me, so I'll get it back. Before the bye, he was someone I was a bit worried about. Last year, great from the UDFA, athletic guy. We found the perfect way to use him. This season, we've Sam Laporta coming in and sort of taking that tight end one role. He kind of regressed a bit. The blocking went away. Weren't really using him in the receiving game. Coming out of the bye, back to last year. This was almost him against the Jets last year. Different play, similar sort of game-changing momentum sort of play. So for him, he's getting a cigar this week.
And who's your cigar going to?
I mean, I'm not going to go avant-garde here. I'm just going to be sensible with it and say Dan. Dan is the guy this week. He's the MVP. He's the one who stuck to the identity of this team to the letter, did not deviate from it one bit. And he is the reason that we won this game, because of how he called it and how aggressive he was with his offense. I mean, there's no other way to put it. He has matured stupidly quickly as a head coach over his time here. He's made his mistakes. He has owned them. He has worked on them. He has rectified them. And he called his best game for us yet. And he won us this game. So he very clearly gets the cigar for me.
And it's time to bring up this quote from Bridget Condon, who is an NFL Network on-air host and reporter, who had this tweet about specifically what Ant is talking about. Khalil Mack talked to her and said he was not trying to throw anyone under the bus with this comment. He said, quote, "We weren't solid." Bridget asked, "Why do you think that?" And he said, "We prepared for certain things and they did the opposite. Understanding the different backs is kind of a flip-floppy game between the two. It was a masterpiece in coaching on the offensive side of the ball, Dan and Ben in particular, because in the chess match, they won." And Khalil Mack, as an elite defender who's had a terrific season, acknowledged it publicly. You can't do any better than that. I'm just going to go Jared Goff. It seems easy, but for me, this was... It's not just how good he was. It's just the accuracy and also a maturation of him. It feels like it's coming to a head now. Like, it's happening regularly that this game's happening. This ain't a flash in the pan. Goff is being elite on a regular basis. But it's not just throwing the ball into the left hand of a guy crossing from left to right so he doesn't have to break stride. You know, it's not just the rhythm stuff. It's understanding the game situation and putting the team on your back when you need to. Like, if he adjusts a bit too late and doesn't make some changes at the line or what have you, and doesn't read the flow of the game as well, and doesn't operate the offense as well as he does when it's being called by Ben on the sideline, maybe we take a field goal earlier on in the game instead of a touchdown. Like, start the second half where things start to turn against us. Jared Goff understands perfectly what's happening in the game situation from the sideline, and he adjusts his throwing to suit and his ability to go for it in those situations. The calls are ballsy, but he understands implicitly what's being asked of him, and he's taking it upon himself to win games for us when he has to. You know, I think it was 177 yards at the half and only 200 yards on the ground at the end of the game or something like that. We had 23 rushing yards in the second half. Because Goff looks at the game and thought, "I got you, boys." And he absolutely deserves props for the way he carried himself in this game.
I'm going to do a quick rare one here as well, and I'm going to throw a shout-out to the other team. And I'm going to throw a shout-out to Justin Herbert. Dude is stupidly good. And Justin, for the love of God, request a trade and get the hell away from that team. Because you are going to be nothing more than a... more fancy Philip Rivers by the time your career is done. They will leave you there to rot. They will not give you the help you need to succeed. And, you know, we saw it with Staff. I'm not saying that I'm not doing that comparison, but we've seen what happens when a good quarterback gets stuck in purgatory. And that guy doesn't deserve the shit show that he gets in the Chargers. An amazing game. I just wanted to shout that out there because he's got one target and that's it. And the run game wasn't working, and he kept them in that. It felt reminiscent of what Caleb Williams has to do every week of the year, where it's all on him and nothing else. So get out of LA, Herb, and go to a good team, Justin. Win a Super Bowl, because he can.
Let me make a Sophie's choice for you, Dan. Because I agree you're doing great, but I just want to ruffle the feathers. The Bears send the Chargers the number one overall pick for Herbert, and then use their other first round pick to draft a tackle. Would you allow that to happen?
Bring it on.
Oh, fell.
Bring it on.
Love it.
Because the Bears will screw him up. We all know the Bears will do just as poor a job as protecting him. So, but I just want him to, I like to see good players succeed. And he is a good player and he doesn't deserve what he's getting there with the Chargers.
I think if Brandon Staley is fired at the end of the job, I think you can pencil Ben Johnson in as the next Chargers head coach.
And you know what? If he's going anywhere, Yeah, I would love that, that more than anything. Fun. Send him to the West Coast where we'll see him once every 4 years or, you know, in a Super Bowl or whatever.
He's a good quarterback as a first head-time head coach. Give him the best quarterback possible.
Yeah, I don't want to see him twice a year, like with Chicago. Go to the West Coast. We'll see you in 4 years, Ben. Enjoy yourself. Be a great guy and stay the hell out of our way. That's all I would say there with that. That is what I want to happen. If he is going to, of course, I don't want him to go, but if he's going, like, over on the West Coast, and, you know. But that's three of that division now. Who'd have thought this time last year we'd be sweeping the AFC West? Like, it was shaping up to be a bloody good division. Really, was it? Even the Raiders looked okay. You're thinking, there's no way they're going to sweep that, and we've just got Denver to go now, and we sweep the lot of them.
It's absolutely nuts. Let's move on to the rest of Sunday's games very, very briefly, because it was a terrific weekend.
Texans. Can we talk Texans? How good are the Texans?
Yes.
Please. Again, I talk a lot about fraudulent teams in the NFL. So let's talk about a real team. I mean, how good were they? Like, everything I said about CJ, I retract, because he's working with plumbers and milkmaids and stuff over there for wide receivers, and he's turning them into like some of the best receivers in the league. Like Noah Brown, was it back-to-back 150-yard games? Like, who the hell is he? I don't know who he is. And the way they nullified the Bengals and just went after them again and again and again and again. Oh my God, that team is good. I love watching them, and it was a smashing game. It's like the Lions one's coming on. I'm like, come on, hurry up, wrap. I want this done. I've got to watch the Lions, but I want to carry on watching. How good are the Texans this year?
Exactly. That. If I had to pick two games from this weekend to show people why the NFL is good, our game and that game. Like I was saying to Matt when we were joining, I was saying, oh yeah, I've been watching it. Number one, because obviously my friend, one of my best friends is a Bengals fan. She loves Joe Chill, but it was a banging game. Like, it was like ours. Just explosive offense. No one could stop the offense. Just trading blows. Bloody lovely.
Stroud has elevated from himself from someone who couldn't rise to the big occasion to someone who is taking every situation as a big occasion and he's rising to it every time. Like the flipping of the switch for him has been something incredible to watch.
He's an MVP dark horse. Like, yes. It's got to be put out there how well he is doing puts him as an MVP dark horse, especially if the Texans can somehow sneak their way into the playoffs.
I don't even think he's a dark horse. I think he's a legitimate candidate. Like, I think he's top four.
Given the weapons he's working with, like, it's even more impressive what he's doing. So, you know, that for me puts him right up there in that race. And the Bengals are just weird this year. It's like, they got the renaissance, but they're losing the edge rushers, injuries hitting the team. The wide receiver core doesn't look right. You know, that's injured as well. But, I was so impressed with them and how well they played. There were some really good games on.
There were. I mean, the Cleveland-Baltimore game, Cleveland's winning by two over Baltimore. Baltimore up by three scores early, and Cleveland just bring it all the way back. I mean, I don't really want to support a certain member of that team, but my God, when they roll, it's quite good fun.
And, you know, we talk about Lamar Jackson. I can tell you right now, as a fantasy owner, he is not putting up good numbers.
No,
he is letting me down isn't there. Big time. He's throwing picks. I mean, the pick six was not good. Like, not good at all. But the Browns, considering that Deshaun Watson got hurt, what did he go? Like, 4-for-13 for 42 yards and an interception? And then they bring in PJ Walker and they somehow still beat the Ravens. It's like, that defense is legitimate. You have to be to come back from a situation like that to win.
Deshaun Watson, 20 of 34 for 213, a touchdown and interception. PJ Walker had one throw. So it was all Deshaun in that game. But, yeah.
How good do the Colts look?
Yeah.
I think the Colts are going to win the AFC South. That is my hot take. I think Gardner Minshew is taking them to the playoffs. He has looked great.
I mean, and there were more
Jonathan Taylor and Zach Moss are looking out the best. Might be the second best running back duo behind Gibbs and Monty right now. They're absolutely killing it. And that defense is stacked.
They out-patrioted the Patriots. Like, they did what the Patriots have done to so many teams over the years and dragged them into a bar fight. Like, not even one of those big-ass 50-man bar fights. This is just, like, two guys slapping each other at the bar, and it looks ugly. And there were nearly as many punts as there were points for the most of that game. I think they got to 10 points and 9 punts, and you're like, God, can you imagine if you were a Brit who'd gone over to Germany to watch that? And you go there, and it's like, oh, you get a punting masterclass at least. But it was rough.
The Mac Jones interception throw was all manners of, oh my God. And he's done now. That's his career over.
Zappy fake snap. Fake.
Zappy fake snap. Yeah.
It's just like, that is where you should have rolled out the Benny Hill theme, shouldn't it? Just that whole drive was just like Benny Hill.
Two safeties, and then he stood there like pointing at someone like, penalty or something. Like,
exactly.
But with Indy's offense specifically, this was ugly. But then they dropped like plus 40 plus on the Cleveland Browns, who were one of the best defenses of all time. So like, it's not like they don't have life on offense. It's just it was one of those games.
Jet lags, jet lag. And I hate bringing it up because I know a certain panel of ours hated the game because a certain player didn't get many targets in that. But the Seahawks Commanders game as well, which I was watching in the corner of my eye during the live watch along. Like, that
Powell
was a cracking game.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
The Washington defense had money on Seattle to win that game. That's our only way you can explain that last drive and how they let DK slip about 20 tackles and get them into the end. They were so weak-assed as well. It's like, oh, come on. You're just not trying there at this point.
One of my least favorite players in football as well. I do not like Kyler Murray, but I cannot deny he makes plays only Kyler Murray can make. That crazy run where it's just like a little remote control car where he runs like 50 yards to get like 8 yards. Like, that's so Kyler. Like, he could really hit them on later on in the year. And I do not like the kid, but he doesn't look like he's missed 400 days at all.
I always liked him from the draft, but I do feel like it'd be funny. Like, you should play the Super Mario music when he starts running.
It's his personality. I don't like his personality, but yeah. I believe for all his shortcomings, literally and physically, he's one of the most gifted players in the league. Like, he is just ridiculous.
See, you say about that epic run, I saw it captioned, and again, it's me pumping the same joke over and over, but I saw it on Twitter. It's that, and it's just like me running away from my parents trying to get them to buy me an Action Man in a toy store, and it's just his epic run. Because ever since I saw that in his like first year, I just can't get that image out of my head of him just being a little toddler running away from his parents. And for him to perform that well on a day when a weekend where Call of Duty multiplayer started, like, wasn't that the trend that every single time there's like a double XP event in Call of Duty, he'd lose? He's booked that trend. He must have banked up enough double XP tokens on his days off recovering from the ACL to tide him over for a couple of weeks so he can actually play well, but get the Cardinals out of position of being able to draft Williams or a May, and then he can go back to being bad again and can maybe draft him a good receiver or another offensive lineman to help him.
And on the flip side, how close is Arthur Smith to getting sacked now? He can't be far off.
It's fine. He's going to get his war orders. He needs to go back and start flying the biplanes again.
But he's lost his mustache. He can't even do that now. Like, he's done. He's toast. I know why Matt has been very quiet though. Because I know we discussed at the end of the preview pod, but we talked about a game about potential playoff hopefuls, one from the AFC and one from the NFC, and Jacksonville.
49ers,
I believe your term was Jacksonville were going to win that.
Oh, I thought they were. I bet on it.
And yeah, I mean, Jesus, how bad did as a Travis again had Travis Etienne in fantasy? What did he do?
I didn't read the game properly in terms of not really realizing that this was the game the 49ers D-line was going to come to play against the Jacksonville O-line, which at its core is just not that good. And Trevor, when he's put under pressure, is just not quite there yet. He doesn't have the poise to do it in those situations. It was a rough game. I'm going to pivot very quickly away from this game to talk about one...
Yeah, no, that's
one last one. Pittsburgh, Green Bay in the biggest shit off of them all. But Pittsburgh got the win, ground it out. And I don't even think that the Packers looked awful. But Pittsburgh proving that, you know, even though that defense was ranked fourth in the division before that, but they're clearly about second or third, really, because the Bengals are not all that. Pittsburgh defense was incredible.
Are all the AFC North still in the playoffs then?
We'll check for us. Give me a second.
No, they're not. The Bengals are out at the moment. Bengals Bills are both out because the Browns
AFC
get in.
North, not the Bills.
No. But I was just saying, both the Bengals and the Bills are outside at the moment because the current seven seed is who is it?
It is the
Houston.
Texans.
The Texans are in, and those two are out at the moment. How fucking cool would that be?
And to make it even cooler, what is next week's matchups?
I was gonna say it's the battle of the one win teams, isn't it? One loss teams, but
that's it's Tuesday night, Thursday night football, Ravens Bengals. That's gotta be a banger.
It's the week 10, it's Bengals Texans.
No, Ravens and Bengals are Thursday night football this week.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what NFL's telling me then, because they're saying next up for the Texans is the Bengals.
Well, maybe it's on a bye week.
No, it's Bengals Ravens on Thursday night football this week. 100%.
It's finally a good one.
This is broken. I'm going to turn away from. Yeah, they're saying this is the Chargers. What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
NFL haven't updated, bastards.
How worried are we about the Vikings, by the way?
Not.
I said it yesterday. Dobbs is playing like the high end of what Justin Fields has played like in his career, and we've managed that before. The worry for me is Hunter just turning on against us. That's the big worry for me.
And I've set up my own thing there because that is both of you saying the Saints are complete frauds. So there we go.
Never really disagreed with that.
No,
and
Matt did.
No, I didn't. I've always said
the start of the season.
No, I didn't. I said that the bloody Panthers were going to win the division. I could not have been more wrong on that, but...
I said that. As I say, well, Carr's in concussion protocol. Michael Thomas and Marshawn Lattimore have got not season-ending injuries, but ones that will be week to week. So they have things to watch. So we might be going up against them with Jameis throwing to Shaheed.
And we know he's good for a few picks, so you'd lump on two interceptions in that. But I expect us to win in the dome now. Like, it's not even a question for me now. I'd expect us to be 6 or 7 point favourites and win. Like, I'd be disappointed if we weren't nearly more than a score favourite against them. Like, the Bears this week, 10.5 now? It's like gone up 1.5 today alone. Aww. It's like that could get nasty. For the Bears, but I'd back us to cover 2 scores plus against the Bears. But the Vikings, I don't know. You just know when the Vikings have that awkward tendency to just hang on, like you just feel like by hook or by crook, they're going to scam their way to wins and just keep within a win of us, keep us honest. Maybe it's a good thing, but I don't want that with 2 games in the last 3 weeks against them.
The thing about the Vikings, much like us, is that their schedule is easy as shit. Their hardest game... Okay, so they've got Broncos away, and I think that's potentially tough. But then they've got Bears, Raiders, Bengals away is maybe hard, then us, Packers, and us. I think they can come through Broncos, Bears, Raiders. Bengals game is interesting, come that sort of area, because where the Bengals are right now, they might still not be in the playoffs at that point. So that's a tough game. And then they've got us twice in 3 weeks. And... if we go into those 3 weeks with the Vikings knowing that if they sweep us, they're in at our expense, I'm not going to be comfortable until we're in.
Mm.
I will not be sitting comfortably until we're in because I'm not taking them for granted that much. But I don't believe that Josh Dobbs is a top 16 quarterback in the NFL. I just don't believe it. So prove me wrong. And if he does, I will tip my cap to him because he will deserve it. And he's... there's no more feel-good story out there right now than Josh Dobbs.
No.
I really admire him for it.
I know. You do feel like he should at least have a job somewhere. You know, like the Titans. Like, he'd be an undisputed starter there.
Well, he was there last year.
Yeah. But you feel like he should be. He's done it on multiple teams.
Yeah, well, if you say that, he's won two. Well, before this week, he'd won two games as a starter, last week, and then the famous Cardinals, that Cowboys game.
Nick Folk as a kicker is one of the surest things in fantasy because they just kick field goals all the time because they're useless. The Titans are. Do you remember the days when people used to rave about Vrabel and the Titans, like compared to us, and now we're so far in front of that franchise right now? It's Derek, unreal.
Those years where they did well, it was Derrick Henry. It was Derrick Henry in a decent play action offense.
Has been good, but the offense has just been terrible outside of Derek.
Vrabel's still a fantastic quarterback, but what you're seeing is basically
head coach.
Beg your pardon. My bad. Vrabel's a fantastic head
coach. That's why they're suffering.
Vrabel's a fantastic head coach. But what you're seeing is kind of what happened to Philly at the end of the Doug Peterson era. And they got rid of him at that time. And then they had a reset and they went back to it. They have come to the end of their cycle with this team. And if their general manager or their owner sees fit to get rid of them, it's a massive mistake. Because teams go through cycles, and I don't think you should blame head coaches for coming to the end of a cycle and then rebooting. I think you should have a look at that team and go, with what they have, are they doing a bad job? I think there's a much bigger argument for getting rid of the GM than there is getting rid of the head coach there. I still believe in him 100% because I feel like he gets the best out of the team that's there. It's just that the O-line has finally gone to shit and Henry slowed down a bit. And that's the end of their team. Because Tannehill relied on that. And Tannehill was a fantasy darling for years because Henry made him so efficient.
Yeah, Henry and then obviously AJ Brown. Like, God.
How bad does that trade look?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's rough, isn't it?
Especially since Burke's been injured and he was supposed to just be the new AJ Brown. It hasn't really happened, unfortunately.
No, but I mean,
here's my outside bet, by the way, for Josh Dobbs, starting quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers next year.
I can see it. They're playing themselves out of the good.
They're playing themselves out of it, but they're not going to win the South. That's the problem. And Baker Mayfield's on a 1-year deal, and he'll be gone, and he'll try and find another thing.
I think they'll end up drafting it. They'll draft like a round two quarterback and sitting behind Dobbs.
Let me make you happy, Ant. They get Dobbs as the starter for next year and draft KJ Jefferson.
Well, I was kind of thinking there was someone closer to them in Florida they could go after instead.
we're both. It's the standard. I mean,
he knows the area.
I can fortunately see it.
He knows the area. They'll know him very well. So
he is well. But, yeah, Jay Chaff is from South Florida.
It's weird though. I mean, we're this far into the season now, and I still don't see where the Super Bowl contenders are yet. Like, I still don't see who's going. Because everyone, just when someone gets ahead and you think, hang on, they're there. Like the Ravens. Now you're like, this, you know, they're turning the ball over again. They don't look great. And now it's like, maybe not the Ravens. Like in the NFC, I don't know. Like the Eagles are okay. They look all right, but they're not separating themselves a lot at the moment. You know, we could be the one seed. We could be the guys who are right up there. I think that's
a possibility. We should be the favourites for it.
Because of the schedule, yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if you guys think different, but I just don't see the Super Bowl teams yet. And usually by this time of the season, you're starting to see them. But I don't.
Yeah. There's clusters in each. It's literally going to be whoever probably makes it to the divisional rounds, so sort of the last four, then you'll be able to pick it out. Because you probably have like a Chiefs who might get an easy matchup. Like, okay, they're going to get into the AFC Championship. They have the momentum, they'll get it. And then it might be like, we'll be there and be like, hang on, we're playing. I don't know. Dallas and beat them again, like for the third time in like 4 weeks.
I mean, it's Chiefs Eagles next week, isn't it? So, like, if the Eagles win that, then you're like,
Then maybe
they're looking pretty good for it if they beat the Chiefs. But then if the Chiefs win, that throws the NFC right out there because we've beaten the Chiefs. And
the Eagles will still have to go to San Francisco.
Yeah, and they'll still have to play the Cowboys. Yeah. You know, they'll at AT&T. And for the Chiefs, it's like, well, that's a big win for them, but then they've got the Ravens to deal with and teams like that. So I think it's incredibly murky who gets there at the minute.
This is the most exciting NFL season in years because it is so week to week. Some teams look like they're going to destroy the league one week and then they lay an egg the next. And, you know, there are some clear, I think, contenders, but I just don't think there's anyone separating themselves as that elite tier. Like, who's better out of Eagles, Chiefs, us? I would put the 49ers Ravens. Because on their good day, they're right up there. The Ravens. And I would put Dallas up there because the way they beat some teams sometimes, it's like, oh my God, who's the best team out of that group? Who's been the most reliable? I mean, apart from laying an egg against the Ravens, I think it's us.
Yeah, either us or...
So I know, the Eagles have one loss, but they have a lot of spotty wins on there. They just didn't look good.
They're giving themselves plenty of breathing space, though, to make sure they're tying up that high, either one or two seed. Exactly. Whereas Dallas are definitely locking themselves probably into five or six, and then they've got to run the gauntlet.
You know, I say this, and the Bears are like, the Bears fans have been after us all day about our strength of schedule, but it just feels like the Cowboys beat up on bad teams at the minute. They need like a signature, you know. They had a chance against the Eagles first time round and they didn't take it. It's like, I think the Cowboys have to prove they can win the big games because they beat up on all the bad teams really well, but they don't do the big ones. But I guess that's the issue we have as well. Like, Seahawks and Ravens losses on there is just like, it's irksome, but they'll beat the Chiefs. What more do they want?
Yeah. Right, I'm going to call this to an end because we've chatted so long after basically what the end of the show was. I'm actually going to end the show here. If you're on Twitch, stick with us because we're going to go and raid Chris Prophet, who is prepping up for the POD cast. So stick with us specifically on Twitch. But to everyone, thank you so much for watching the show and for us just chatting at the end of it and all the poetry track before it. If you're interested in that shit, then go and watch.
I'll clip up a couple of them.
It's a beautiful thing to watch. Anyway, next show is the College Football Podcast reviewing Week 11, looking ahead to Week 12, which is the penultimate game of the regular season. And then you're going into the final week, and then you're going into championship games, and then you're into bowl games. So coming to the business end of the season, you need to go and listen to the guys. Drafts in Detroit, you need to hear about who's coming out, and they're the best guys to listen for it. Bears previews coming up on Thursday, hoping to have our friends down from Bear Down Report. It's going to be a terrific preview show, so please do listen out for that. Otherwise, our socials, Rural Alliance UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and the Facebook group for worldwide fans is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pro Worldwide. The articles are on rrtluk.com. You can find the store there too, and you can subscribe and rate us 5 stars on your podcast provider. It makes all the difference to us. Thank you in advance. Poland Knights comes in the clutch with a final quote just saying, I love this show. It is the perfect evolution of beard growth. And with that, we're going to leave you for this show. For Ryan McCluskey, who departed slightly earlier, Ant and Ash, and I am Matt. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll see you later in the week. For now, 7-2 is rarefied territory, people. Don't panic. It's only up from here. Let's go, Lions, one pride.
One pride.
One pride.